Okay, so we saw a beautiful sugya yesterday, Erech and HaMetaltelin, three different pshatim. We're up to the Gemara where it says, Rabbi Yehuda Oimer. Now again, as has been our way, we have to keep on referring back to the Mishnah in Daf Beis Amud Aleph and see what this is referring to. So if you have the Mishnah in Daf Beis Amud Aleph in front of you, you'll see on the fourth wide line of that Mishnah. On the fourth wide line, it says Erech and HaMetaltelin b'shloisha, but then it says Rabbi Yehuda Oimer Echad Mehem Kayin. So Rabbi Yehuda does not disagree with the numbers; he just says that one of those numbers, meaning one of those three, has to be a Kayin. So if you look back in our Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda Oimer Amalei Rapopula by b'shloimer. Le Rabbi Yehuda, Hainu Deksiv Kayin. According to Rabbi Yehuda learns, how does he know that you have to have one of the Dayanim must be a Kayin? The answer is because it actually says the word Kayin in that posuk over there, if you have a look. Rashi on the Mishnah, in fact, quotes it, Deksiv Kayin Beparsha Ke'erkecha HaKayin, which guess what is this week's parasha. So what's the question of the Gemara? That's all good according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda requires one of them to be a Kohen because it says Kohen. You don't need all of them to be a Kohen, but at least one. Elo l'Rabbonon Kohen l'omeluhu. But according to the Rabbonon, that's the Tanakama, Kohen l'omeluhu. Now what's the question? What exactly is the Shaila of the Gemara?
Why is it mentioned in the Torah?
According to Rabbanon, who made no mention of the fact that you need a Kohen, so clearly they obviously hold that you don't need a Kohen. Well, if you don't need a Kohen, so why does the Torah write? Why does the Torah write the word Kohen? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's very simple. The reason why the Torah writes the word Kohen is in fact to teach you that you actually need a Kohen. Makes perfect sense. But according to Rabbanon, who made no mention of anything to do with Kohen, clearly they hold you don't need to have a Kohen. So why indeed does the Torah write Kohen? It's very, very unclear. In fact, it's so unclear that the Gemara says, Kasha, we do not have a Teretz. Okay, we move on to the next line of the Gemara, which again requires that we look back into the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, V'hakar kois tisho v'kohen. Everything we've been discussing is the pidyon of hektish of metaltelin. Now we're talking about karkois. Karkois means land. So which means, have a look at the Rashi there in the Mishnah, on the Beis Amud Aleph. Rashi says, eva karkois shel hektish. If you have land that belongs to hektish, so somebody dedicated his field, for example, to hektish and now wants to redeem it back, Torich tes. You've got to have nine v'ho'asiri koin, and the tenth one has got to be a koin. So ten altogether, including one of them is a koin l'shumon, in order to evaluate it im bo lifdaisan. If they want to now redeem it, and says Rashi b'gemara mafarish, the Gemara will both explain this v'yalif luhu mikroi and learn this all out from psukim. So that's what it means in the Mishnah when it says v'hakar kois. Which means the Mishnah is teaching you two halachas. Number one, with regard to the number. How many do you have to have altogether? You've got to have 10. Number two, the second chiddush, that one of those 10 has to be a kohen. Yeah.
Why are they saying nine and a kohen? Why aren't they just saying 10 and one has to be a kohen? I don't get that.
Same thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why even bring up the number nine? I don't get that.
Nine and a kohen, 10 altogether. Says the Gemara by us, Hakarkois tisho v'kohen, mino hanemili. Now, we have to learn this very careful. It's a tricky little sugya. Mino hanemili. How do you know that you've got to have nine and a kohen, 10 altogether, one of whom is a kohen? Omar Shmuel. So Shmuel says, I'm going to learn it out of the pasuk as follows. Asoro koyanim ksuvin b'parasha. The word koyin is written 10 times in this parasha. So we have a parasha that talks about Hekdesh and redeeming Hekdesh, and the word koyin is mentioned 10 times. Okay. Chad legufe. So one time, as we've mentioned elsewhere, the first time that something is ever mentioned in a parasha is not available for a drasha, because it's not yet superfluous. So I need it legufe, which means for itself. I can only start making drashas where there's a word which is superfluous. So for example, if a word is mentioned twice, so then you can say, well, why is it mentioned second time round? Why wouldn't have the first time sufficed? So when I'm reading these 10 mentions of a kohen, so the first time that the kohen is mentioned, well, clearly that's not available for a drasha. That's needed legufe. There's nothing yet spare. Okay. Says the Gemara, carry on. Hanach have a miut. Hanach have a miut. Every single time it says kohen, meaning from the second time, the second mention onwards, that is a miut. What does it mean? It's a miut. It's a limitation. It's telling you a kohen's got to be involved, and not what, and not a yisrael. As we know, we have two different types of drashas. We have a drasha which is a ribui, which comes to be inclusive. We have a drasha which is a miut, which comes to be exclusive. If the Torah would not have written the word kohen at all in this parasha, what would we have said? That yes, you've got to have evaluators, and who must they be? Whoever. Torah doesn't stipulate. So if the Torah writes the word kohen, clearly the Torah is stipulating this is a miut, it's exclusive, that those evaluating the Hekdesh cannot just be anyone, it's got to be a kohen and not somebody else, meaning not a Yisrael. That's the definition of a miut. A miut always means A, by definition, not B. So every time it's written a kohen in the parasha, that is a miut. Now we have the big question. Rabbi Yisai, we have a very, very strange sounding rule. What is the rule? We have a rule called a miut achar miut. What does that mean, a miut achar miut? Okay, imagine I would say to you, Reb Larry, you're more than welcome to come down from Netanya, come to Bet Shemesh, walk into my home, and take something from my fridge. So I haven't limited it in any way because I've told you you can take whatever you like. If I would say to you, please, Larry, open the fridge and take something green from my fridge. So that's a miut. Because I've told you you could take something green, but not something yellow. Okay, so then you're limited. There's a miut. So yes, you have every permission to open the fridge, but you cannot take what you like. You can only take what was included in the miut. You can only take something green. Imagine if I would say to you now the following sentence. Larry, please come down from Netanya to Beit Shemesh and feel free to take anything green from the fridge because I want to give you something which is green. Ah. You mentioned the green word twice. The first time you mentioned green, it was a miut. So why did you have to say the miut again? Why was it necessary to say again at the end of the sentence, please take something green? I've already limited you. I've already told you that I don't want you to take something red and yellow and pink. I've said green. So here we have a rule. This is called a miut achar miut. An exclusive drasha following an exclusive drasha, and this might sound strange, but this is the rule. If you have a miut achar miut, then we say, ironically and almost paradoxically, it does the opposite. It's actually now inclusive rather than exclusive. If I would have said to you only once, open the fridge and take something green, that would have meant only green and nothing else. But if I say that limit, that miut, twice, I say the word take something green, take something green, then it comes converted from a miut, which is exclusive, to a ribui, which is inclusive, which means you can take whatever you like from the fridge. Now, of course, this is a very puzzling rule, because if when I said the word green twice, that actually becomes a ribui and you can take whatever you like, so then why did I ever need to mention the word green in the first place? I have just simplified matters by saying, Larry, open the fridge, take what you like. So let's see our Gemara. We're trying to work out, where is the Torah source? How do you know that you've got to have 10 people, one of whom is a Kohen, 10 people who are evaluating this karka in order to know how to redeem it for Hektish? So again, Mino Anamili, Omar Shmuel, Asora, Koyanim, Ksuvim, Beparasha. 10 times the word Koyan is written in the parasha. Now, as we've already established, the first time is not available for a drasha. Chad legufe. The first time the Koyan is mentioned, well, there's nothing superfluous, there's nothing surprising, there's no extra word. So it's needed legufe. What does that mean, legufe? It's needed for itself, just for simple translation purposes. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, chad legufe deliboy koin, to teach you that it requires a koin. Every time a word is mentioned in the Torah, we don't suddenly jump up and down to look to make drushes. It's only if it's superfluous. So the first time the word koin is mentioned, it's needed for its own simple translation, nothing superfluous, nothing extra, you cannot make a drasha. Okay, then we carry on.
Next one's a miut.
Says the Gemara, Hanach, but all the rest have a miut. Achar miut. It says the word Kohen again, and then again, and then again, and then again. 9 times, which is extra. So when you have that whole string of miuts, what did we just say before? The ein miut achar miut elo le rabois. If you have a miut followed by another miut, well then it's actually coming to be inclusive rather than exclusive. So therefore, yes, you have to have 10 people altogether because the word koyan is mentioned 10 times. But rather than thinking you need 10 koyanim, I don't need 10 koyanim. Why? Because if they would all have to be koyanim, well, that's a miut. You're saying only koyanim and nobody else. But by virtue of the fact that we have this miut achar miut rule, that actually comes to be marbe da'afilu tes Yisrael. That actually, even if 9 of them are Yisrael, the echod koyan, that would also suffice. This is a very, very, very delicate drasha. On the one hand, remember, we're trying to explain 2 things at the same time. We're trying to explain why, on the one hand, must you have 10 people there in the first place? Number 2, where do you get these numbers from that 9 can be a Yisrael, but 1 of them is a Kohen? Where does that come from? So it's the total number and also the makeup of that number that we're trying to investigate. So the makeup of the number, that's more complicated. The first question, which is how many altogether have to be there? Well, that's very simple because it says Kohen 10 times. So clearly it's 10 people. So I would have thought that if it says Kohen 10 times, well, clearly I've got to have 10 Kohenim. No, because 10 Kohenim means a big miut. Kohenim and not a Yisrael. But we've already established that when the Torah has a miut, acha miut, it's coming l'rabois. And if it's coming l'rabois, then to the contrary, it's coming to include rather than exclude, meaning you don't have to have a kohen. You can have anyone, you can have Yisrael. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, miut achar miut, de kulu mema'ati Yisrael. Because every single time it says the word kohen, that l'chayre is a miut, it's coming to exclude Yisrael. De mashma, because the translation of the word kohen is v'loy Yisrael. So every time the Torah states the word kohen, it's a miut. A miut achar miut is coming to rabbis. Therefore, it's not coming to exclude. It's coming to include. And therefore, besides for the first one, which was literal, that wasn't darshaned at all, the first one has to be a kohen, but the rest can all be inclusive, which means not needs either kohen, but it can also be a Yisrael. Yeah.
So I have a couple of questions. First of all, the Torah didn't have to mention kohen 10 times. If the Torah would have mentioned the kohen twice, we still would be in the same position.
Okay, that's the Gemara's next question, yeah.
Okay. Second of all, if it just would have said kohen once and then 10 people in another way, I might have a hava mina to believe, okay, it's telling me 10 people, but it mentioned kohen once, so we need one kohen. So it'd still be in the same place. So in other words, what would the Torah have to have had to have said for us to understand that it means 10 kohanim?
No, because we have a rule that when you have a klal, then if there's a prat mentioned, then that prat demonstrates about the whole klal. So if I have a klal, you've got to have 10 people, and the kohen is mentioned once, then maybe that would shed light on the whole klal that they all got to be kohenim.
And then couldn't I come back to you and say, no, if that were the case, I would have mentioned it more than one time. The reason it said once is because it says we have to have one kohen.
No, because like we said before, if it mentions it more than one time, then that's a ribui, it's not a miut. It's the contrary. By mentioning it more times, you're making it worse, not better. Now, so at the moment, we've answered both questions. We've answered both. How do you know you have to have 10 people? Very simple answer. 10 kohenim mentioned. How do I know that, in fact, you only need one kohen, but 9 can be a Yisrael? Because, paradoxically, the more the Torah mentions kohen, well, the more miut, that is, ein miut acha miut elo le rabbis, that's coming to include, not to exclude. Says the Gemara, Maskiv la Rav Huna, Brei de Rav Nosson. Maskiv always means an attack, takif. So Rav Huna comes to attack Rav Nosson. He asks the following question. Eima chamisho koyanim v'chamisho Yisraelim. Kasha. Maybe 5 and 5. Meaning, when I read the Torah for the very first time, I open up my Chumash in this week's parasha and I see the word Kohen for the first time. Okay, so what does Kohen mean? Kohen means Kohen. I don't need to make a drasha. That's simple translation. Kohen means a Kohen and nobody else. Fine. I then move on. All of a sudden, the word Kohen is mentioned now a second time. Ooh, that's two miuts. And we have a rule that ein miut acha miut elo l'rabois. So that second mention of kohen, paradoxically, is not coming to rule out a Yisrael, is actually coming to rule in a Yisrael. Okay, fine. So what's the score after two mentions of kohen? I would have said the score is 1-1. The first mention of kohen is taken literally. It's got to be a kohen, that's a miut. The second time the word kohen is mentioned, that's a miut, achar miut, so that's coming to include a Yisrael. Okay, so number one is a kohen, number two is Yisrael. Now keep on reading. Now all of a sudden it says kohen for the third time. Okay, so I start the whole process again. The third one has to be a kohen. And guess what? Then I move on and a kohen is mentioned a fourth time. That's a miut, achar miut. Okay, that's a Yisrael. And then the fifth, and the sixth, and the seventh, and the eighth, and the ninth, and the tenth. Every time I have a miut, that's a kohen, but then a miut achar miut, which comes in the rabbi. So for every kohen, there's an equal amount of Yisraelim. So how do you know it's one kohen and 9 Yisraelim? Maybe it's 5 kohenim and 5 Yisraelim. Look at Rashi. There's a long Rashi over here. Says Rashi, Ve'ema chamisha koinim v'chamisha Yisrael, bo'inon dekamo. But sorry, Ve'ema chamisha koinim v'chamisha Yisrael, bo'inon, comma. Maybe what we require, bo'inon means to require, maybe we require five koinim and five Yisraelim. Now, how on earth do you get to that number? Rashi says, I will take your hand and I will explain to you. Dekamo, what does dekamo mean? The first one, like bovakama. The kama, the first one, is le gufe. That's to be translated literally. You've got to have a kohen. Fine. So when you read that word kohen, that's taken to mean literally, you've got to have a kohen and not a Yisrael. Fine. Vesheini loy, and the second one to it, have a miut achamiut. That's a miut achamiut, because the first time it says kohen is a miut, because it means a kohen and nobody else. And now the second time is written kohen, it's a miut. So what does that do? That comes to be marbe a Yisrael. So it's one kohen and one Yisrael. Now move on. Veshlishi, now you get to number three, hodar itzrich legufe. Once again, that's needed to be translated literally. Then I have a kohen. It's got to be a kohen. De kiven de israbile. Because once I included a Yisrael, mi miut achar miut, the Afilu Yisrael, once I had the second Kohen mentioned, which therefore included Yisrael, so I need now the third mention to say, no, once again, it's a Kohen. Yehodar Kosav Kohen, Dafke Kosav. It's telling you, you've got to have the third one's got to be a Kohen. The Lav Miut Achamiut, the Hosheini Lav Miut here at a Ribui. The second mention of Kohen, was that a Miut or was that a Ribui? The second mention, Rabbi Yosef, was a second mention of Kohen, a miut or a ribui?
A ribui.
A ribui, which means therefore that the third mention of Kohen, which is a miut, would you agree that's not called a miut, a har miut?
Ribui. It's fair.
Right? Because it's only a miut, a har miut, if both of them in succession were a miut. But if you've already told me that number two was a ribui, well, then number three is not a miut achar miut, it's a miut achar ribui. So if it's translated literally, number three has got to be a kohen. The chayin kulam. Therefore, that's how it's, this progression proceeds.
All the way around.
Dafka. One of them is taken literally, it's got to be a kohen. V'chad, have a miut achar miut. That, no, it
next
comes
one
to
is Yisrael.
Kohen Yisrael. So it's kohen Yisrael, kohen Yisrael, kohen Yisrael, kohen Yisrael, kohen Yisrael, every single time. Five all at full time. So how do you know there's got to be nine Yisraelim and one Kohen? Only one Kohen. Maybe you've got to have five Kohenim. Because numbers 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10 will be a miut achamiut. So those include Yisrael. But after that, you start the process again. Says the Gemara, you're quite right.
British Asher.
Asher, we don't know.
Square.
Okay, we now move on. We're moving on. Look back into the Mishnah. Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Fifth wide line, it says three words. V'odom k'yotze bohen. You have that right there in the middle. The first word on the line is v'hakar kois. Fifth line of the Mishnah, the wide lines, and it says v'odom k'yotze bohen. So first let's translate, and then we try and understand. Va'odom k'yotze bohen means, and similarly, a human being. Now, this is highly troubling. Why is it highly troubling? What are we talking about until this stage? We're talking about redeeming hekdesh. What type of hekdesh? Either metaltalin or karkois. And the Mishnah is concluding, similarly, a human being. What does that mean, a human being? So look at Rashi there on the Mishnah. The Odom, a human being, habo liftois atzmoi miyad hekdesh. If you want to redeem yourself from hekdesh, you're not redeeming a table, which is metaltalin, Neither are you redeeming a field, which is karka, but you want to redeem yourself as a human being. So what is the Mishnah telling us? The same rule would apply, and therefore, sorich asara l'shuma. You need 10 people to evaluate him to see how much we redeemed for. Now, what's the big question? Why does this not make sense? Says Rashi uba Gemara parich. The Gemara is going to ask a question. Adam, me, Kodesh, question mark. Can a man be made into Hekdesh? There's no such thing. I can be Makdish a table, I can be Makdish a field, I can be Makdish an animal, but I cannot be Makdish myself. Remember, I can give the value of myself, or I can give the Erech of myself. But either way, I myself never became Kodesh. As opposed to if I take a glass of water and I say, I want this glass of water to become Hekdesh, then it itself adopts Kedusha. It has Kedusha, which means, that's it, hands off. You can't use it now, belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. And if I now decide, actually, on second thoughts, I want the glass of water back, I've got to redeem it in order to strip it of its Kedusha. But you can only strip something of its Kedusha, which means a pidyon, if it had Kedusha in the first place. And you can only give Kedusha to Metaltalin, Harka, Behema, but not a human being. So how can the Mishnah even talk about being Poida, a human being, and he needs evaluation, etc., etc., etc.? Person can never become Kodesh in the first place. If I'd say, I'm hereby being Makdish myself, no such thing. Yeah, Rabbi Larry.
Isn't a woman Hekdish when she gets married? Why? It's Makah, he's Makadish, it's Kedusha.
Does it become property of the Beis HaMikdash? That's what Hekdash means for our purposes. You cannot be Poida a wife. A person can divorce a wife, but you cannot be Poida a wife. Poida means it's because property.
It says Vakone Esatzma. It says Vakone Esatzma. She can redeem herself back. She can buy herself back.
No, it doesn't. She cannot buy. It has no way of buying herself. It does not say that.
In Kedushin, doesn't the first mission say?
The husband will die. Neither of those is a pidyon. Neither of those is anything that she could do anything about. But Koines Atzma means, and she will once again receive her own independence. It's not a pidyon. How will she receive her independence if either the husband decides with her consent or against her consent to divorce her, or he dies? There's no pidyon. She does not belong to the Beis HaMikdash. So look at the Gemara.
Interesting, though, that it's called Kedushin.
It's called Kedushin because there's an element of Hekdush, as Rashi explains, Tosfos explains there, that she's forbidden to everybody else. Just like Hekdush belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and cannot be used by anybody else, so to this woman as well. But it does not mean that she belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Look at the Gemara by us. Va'odom k'yoytze bohen. Says the Gemara, I don't understand what you're talking about. Three-word question. Adam mi kadosh. Can a person have inherent holiness that would require a pidyon b'chal? Is there such thing as being kadosh, being makdish a person? There's no such concept whatsoever. Says the Gemara, you're quite right. Apparently, that's not the case. What is the case? Ba'oimer de'me'olai. I'm not making myself Hekdesh. Rather, I'm dedicating my value to the Beis HaMikdash. So what does it mean, my value? What is my value? That's why I need an evaluation. But I don't need an evaluation to be poida the person from Hekdesh because he never became Kodesh. But if I say I'm hereby dedicating to the Beis HaMikdash my value, so what is my value, says the Gemara, the Tanya, because we've learned in a Braisa, Ha'oimer Demei Olai. If anybody says, quote unquote, Demei Olai, it should be on me, my value, meaning I hereby commit myself to pay to the Beis HaMikdash, to Hekdesh, my value, shomin oisoi ke'eved hanimkar bashuk. So you'd evaluate him the way you would a slave in the marketplace. So if I want to buy an Eved from you, I go to the slave market and there'll be a price, $1,000 or $10,000. If somebody says, Demei Olai, we treat him as it were, for purposes of Hekdesh, as an Eved. How do I evaluate an Eved in the slave market? So too, when somebody commits himself to give his value to Hekdesh, I've got to evaluate him in the slave market. So for all intents and purposes, I am giving him, with regard to Hekdesh, the status of an Eved. Okay, says the Gemara in conclusion, for Eved iskish lekarkois. We have a Hekdesh. A Hekdesh means a comparison. We'll see in a moment, Rashi quotes it. With regard to many halachos, an Eved, a slave, is compared to Karka. If that's the case, 1 and 1 is 2. Number one, we're considering this person, as it were, to be an Eved. Obviously, not literally, but with regard to Hekdesh, number one. Number two, we have a Hekdesh that tells you that an Eved, for many, many halachic requirements, has the status of Karka. Well, if you put those two in the Cholam pot, what do you end up with? We know that when you do the pidyon of karka, how many people do you need? How many evaluators? You need 10. All right, that's the case, and the picture's complete. When the Mishnah says, Odom k'yetze bohen, that similarly the same would apply to a human being, it doesn't mean the pidyon of a human being. There's no such thing as a pidyon of a human being. You can't be makadish, can't be makdish a human being. What does it mean? The human being of Adam dedicated his value to the Beis HaMikdash. I treat him, therefore, as it were, as an Eved. An Eved has the status of Karka. Karka needs 10 evaluators, and therefore, so does he. Look at Rashi. But Adam k'yotze bohen k'karkois. I treat a human being like a karaka, i.e. debo inami teisha v'koyin. I need 10 altogether, 9 Yisraelim and a koyin l'shumoi to evaluate him. Why? Says Rashi in conclusion, v'eved iskish l'karkois. We have a hekesh comparing an eved to karaka. It says v'hisnachaltem oisom. It's talking about avodim, and it says v'hisnachaltem. What does this nachaltem mean? Hisnachaltem is the word of nachala, which you normally use in association to land. And yet over here, the Torah is not talking about land, the Torah is talking about an Eved.
So almost out of time, almost out of time.
Right, okay, so the Torah is comparing an Eved to Karka. Just like Karka needs 10 evaluators, so too this person who is being treated like an Eved also needs 10 evaluators. Okay, I wish you have a wonderful, wonderful day, Mr. Hashem.
We're going to share tonight.
Yes, Amit Hashem.
Yeah, Shakar. Okay.